Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Summer is supposed to be an opportunity to slow down, but when you look at your kids, you can't help but notice that your kids are growing up fast. Help them build independence as they grow with Greenlight. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families where parents can keep an eye on kids' money habits while kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. It's the easy, convenient way to raise financially smart kids. Get your first month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/pod.
Welcome to Eye on the Illini. This is Illini guy Mike Kegley. We got a real treat tonight. We're doing a little bit of what we call a mailbag episode. We've gotten a lot of questions from people, and we wanted to take a few minutes to answer them with Matt and Ked. But we also have a special guest tonight. Mike Farrell, the godfather of recruiting, is here. And, of course, those people who read IlliniGuys.com, you know, it every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning, we have the Farrell Report, where we get an idea of what's going on with Illini recruiting and get kind of a national perspective on what is going on with Illinois. So we'll have Mike on for the first part of this, which we're excited about. And I'm going to throw the first question at you, Mike. You know, you're a guy who's been covering college football on a national perspective for years. With the surprise season that Illinois had, they ended up 8-4, a pretty good season. It was on the brink of being a great one. What has this done when you're listening to recruits and people talk about the Illini program? What are the tangible results that you're hearing in terms of their presence in the recruiting world?
There's a little more respect. When I first started, you know, with you guys, I sort of did a deep dive into what Illinois has done, you know, recently. I obviously knew what they did in the past, but I wanted to see, you know, is Brett Bielema the same guy he was at Wisconsin? Because I don't think Arkansas is a really good indicator of what his strategy is as a recruiter. You know, and it was a lot of under the radar guys, a lot of guys who had MAC offers, not a lot of Power Five wins there, but some talented players that I could see fitting in what Bielema wants. You know, he's not a guy who's going to recruit 4 and 5 stars. He's a guy who's going to develop 3 stars. But as the season wore on, and I didn't think they'd be as good as they were this season, I didn't think they'd start off as well as they did. And, you know, certainly it's a disappointing finish. But if you told anybody at the beginning of the season Illinois is going to go 8-4, they would take it in a second. I started seeing a little bit more interest from, you know, Power Five recruits, mostly 2023, but some 2024 as well. What you're going to see here is the dividends are going to pay in next year's class. They're starting to see it this year. You know, a guy like Malik Elzey decommits from Cincinnati. You know, I don't know if that would have happened. He's got an in-home, I believe, this weekend with Illinois. I don't think that would have happened if they weren't off to a good start, if they didn't open up the offense a smidge, if this wasn't a new offensive coordinator and Bielema selling a little bit more pass balance. So he's a really good example of a local kid that was going to go away to a school that's honestly lesser when it comes to Group of Five versus Power Five. And I know they're headed to the Big 12 that could come back home. And that a lot of that has to do with what people are seeing on the field. So they're not going to recruit, you know, to the level of, you know, Penn State or Ohio State or Michigan or anybody like that. They are going to recruit to the level of Wisconsin and Iowa, you know, Purdue, Nebraska, and that's what they need to do. And I think they're in better shape to do that now.
One question that I had, and then after you answer this, we'll let Matt throw a question at you. We'll let Ked throw a question at you. But, you know, December 5th, people start jumping in to the transfer portal. And you have done a wonderful job of kind of talking a little bit about the quarterback situation that Illinois has and looking for some quarterbacks in the transfer portal. Any names that you're hearing connected with Illinois or that Illinois may be interested in up to and including today's, announcement by Brendan Armstrong, which kind of took a few people by surprise, you know, coming out of Virginia. What are you hearing on the quarterback position with Illinois so far?
Well, one of the guys they were definitely, you know, everybody knew he was going to jump in the portal was McNamara from Michigan. Is a fit because what they want in the portal is they want somebody who runs a similar offense to what they run. Somebody who's going to provide leadership, somebody who's going to, you know, not make a lot of mistakes, but be able to push the ball downfield. Now it looks like Iowa is trending more so for him than Illinois is, but that's the type of guy that you look for. Brendan Armstrong just went in. Don't know if Illinois is interested or not. I assume they're going to send feelers out there, obviously, because he's been so productive, regressed this year. But, you know, it's coaching change, different offense, all that stuff goes into play with every quarterback, and how they adjust to it is different. The guy I keep hearing, and I don't know if they're going to get him or not, is the Gabbert kid, Brett Gabbert at Miami of Ohio. You know, St. Louis kid. You know, they recruit that area very well. Now, Missouri might have other things in mind. His brother played there. I think they're going to make a run at him, depending on which quarterbacks they lose. But that's the one that keeps sort of popping up. Now, I don't know how much interest he has. It's the portal is really hard to cover. From a 10,000-foot view, you can cover it. You know, this kid jumped to the portal. We could put that out there. We could break that news. We could follow the offers. The kids don't want to talk because there's a level of disappointment and shame in the portal. Yep. You know, so they're really not interested in talking. Plus, they're also, you know, been there, done that on the high school level. So a Cade McNamara, who was a kid who wanted to talk quite a bit out of high school and was very eager to do so, he's not going to talk to people. So you're going to have to get sources. And sources are coaches. And oftentimes they're coaches of, you know, the high school coach of the kid, or, you know, friends of the family, or coaches at schools that are pursuing the kid and can tell you, you know, what other schools are involved. And that's tiring and endless because everybody lies too. So I could talk to four schools about Brendan Armstrong tomorrow. Each one of them will tell me something different about what he wants and how they fit in. And very rarely do you get candor and truth and saying, well, you know, this kid's going to go here for sure. We liked him, but we're not going to get him. So you have to dissect and sort of go through all that muck and try to come up with what's real. So if you hear something over and over again, then maybe there's something to it, you know? So Gabbert's really the only one that I've heard consistently with them. But I'm sure the staff has made overtures to a lot of these quarterbacks just to see, you know, if this would be a fit for them or if it's something they're interested in pursuing.
Now, one final question before I hand it over, but Brendan Lewis out of Colorado, we've heard rumors. I don't know if there's any substantiation to that. I actually watched him play in high school because I live down in Melissa, Texas. The kid certainly is one of the better athletes I've seen. You know, he can throw the ball 70 yards. He's fast, strong. Have you heard anything connecting Illinois to him?
Not yet. And what I'm also doing is looking at sort of what Illinois wants in the quarterback. He's a Lovie Smith quarterback. I don't know if he's a Bielema quarterback. Again, you're going to send feelers out to everybody. If you're going to get a kid like that, who's a Power Five quarterback, who's got some experience, but has been very erratic as a passer, but a good athlete. If he shows interest, you're going to reciprocate that interest. You're going to talk. You're going to see if a visit is necessary. But you have to be careful, you know, not to turn off other quarterbacks that you're talking to. Because if you're talking to 10, you know, they could talk to each other, and then you put yourself in a bad position. So I haven't heard that link, but it wouldn't surprise me at all, you know, if he's somebody they've reached out to, you know, sort of test that interest level.
Excellent. Ked?
Hey, Mike, how you doing? This is Kedrick Prince. Quick question for you. I know Bielema told a lot of us, you know, when he was hired at Illinois, that the one thing he wanted to do was to build a complete roster, kind of like when, you know, you mentioned Iowa, Wisconsin, and Purdue, and Minnesota. But I think they're losing a lot. And I know he talked about the quality of depth. Do you think, because I certainly think they're going to, they'll have to, but do you think that they're going to use a transfer portal more this year because of what they're losing?
I do, and I also think that the class was originally supposed to be a smaller class because we didn't really project the success this season. We didn't project as many people, you know, players being interested in leaving early. You know, and with success also comes guys that want to jump in the portal. I mean, you know, oddly enough, you know, you get a backup defensive back who feels he should have been playing, and all this attention is being paid to the Illinois defense, and he gets kind of disgruntled and he wants to find a new home. When really what he should do is wait his turn, you know, and be patient. So it's funny because success can lead to more transfers as opposed to a lack of success sometimes. So they're going to lose players to the NFL. They're going to lose players to the portal. They're going to definitely try to be aggressive in the portal recruiting. So what they've done on the recruiting side is the class that I thought was going to be 18 to 20 will probably be closer to 23 to 24. They're trying to address some needs late in the class with JUCOs because Bielema is still an old school guy and he believes the JUCO product is still a good product, which I think it is too. But a lot of people have sort of gone away from the JUCO product because they think they can get, you know, instant results in the portal. But he's looking for plug-and-play experienced guys. And he's looking for those guys that can fit into what he wants to do, but also sort of have maybe ties to the area or are attracted to the offense or defense. They're a hot commodity, and hot is very relative. You know, I mean, USC is a hot commodity. So let's say they're a warm commodity. They're much more attractive as an 8-4 football team that almost won the West than they were as the expected 6-6 or 5-7 team we thought. So they're going to have a lot more interest from players in the portal, and I think they're going to take advantage of that. Whereas before, you know, you don't want to reach. You don't want to just take a kid to take a kid. And what they do, their strategy there in recruiting and in the portal, find kids that nobody else is really in love with, that we like a lot. Keep them quiet. Exactly. And frustrating because the staff doesn't talk to anybody. But keep them quiet. I mean, the FCS portal opened 2 weeks ago, and they've already, from what I hear, evaluated about 200 kids. And they're looking for those FCS kids. There's a lot of them that have blown up with 8 to 10 Power 5 offers, and a lot is relative, but a few. They want that guy where they're going to be their first Power 5 offer. It's not going to be immediate. It's going to be sort of, let's see what happens in the next couple of weeks. If he's still under the radar, we're going to offer him. We're going to build that loyalty. Then when we do offer him, other people are going to take notice of that. Oh, my God, he's his first Power 5. Then they're going to come in. But then they feel they're in a strong position. So they're not going to reach. They're not going to go after the kids that everybody wants in the portal. They're going to go after kids they like. And it's kind of frustrating to a fan because you want them, you know, okay, wow, this kid, you know, here from Austin Peay has 20 FBS offers. Why isn't Illinois one of them? That's not their strategy, and it's not the way Bielema works. So, but I always say trust in what he does. I mean, he's really been successful mostly. Being successful in the SEC West at Arkansas is not going to happen, especially when you play that offense, which was more run heavy than it is now. But what he's done in Wisconsin and Illinois is what he does. You know, hard-nosed, tough kids, not a lot of flashy, not a lot of four stars, but kids that are going to be, you know, very, very good and contributors to your program.
Thank you.
Mike, you kind of, Matt Stevens, you kind of hit on this, but what's your impression of what Bielema's done and kind of moneyballing the recruiting market with the junior college market? And I think he's kind of trying to figure out how to make that his home when the portal probably isn't going to be his bread and butter, and recruiting 4 and 5 stars probably isn't going to be his butter, bread and butter in Champaign.
Yeah, what happens is the JUCO coaches appreciate Power Five football coaches that take time, you know, to sit down with them and sit down with their kids, because it's becoming sort of a dying art. And that's going to lead to potential loyalty down the line. You know, there's a lot of schools that I mentioned, you know, get away from the JUCO route now and go right to the portal. And the portal kids are similar to the JUCO kids. I mean, you know, a little bit less. So some of the portal kids go in because they just aren't getting playing time or they're not successful where they are. JUCO kids generally go in because they didn't have the grades or they weren't recruited heavily enough or they had some off-field issues. So the portal is much bigger and it's a bigger pool, and it's what a lot of, you know, teams are focusing. But when you talk to JUCO coaches, having a coach come in and spend that time on his off week and sit down with him, the coach, and sit down with the kids, that's going to lead to success, maybe not in the 2023 cycle for all these kids, but 2024. And it's honestly a differentiator now. So I think it's a wise move. It's kind of a smart strategy. I mean, he knows what he's doing. He's not going to JUCO, you know, simply because that's where he wants to fill his roster from. He's going there because no one else is. Mm-hmm. And he's not a dummy, and he knows that it's going to be appreciated by these coaches. And it's, you know, again, he doesn't have to place kids at JUCO either. That's not what they do. You know, so they appreciate that even more. If you were a program with bad academics and you had to place 5 or 6 JUCO kids every year, of course you're going to be at that school. Of course you're going to be kissing the ring. But if you're not that guy and you're coveting JUCO guys, even at the expense of portal guys, then you're going to be in a good shape. And that's his strategy. So I think you're going to see more JUCO kids over the years when they realize an immediate need comes to play. The JUCO kids aren't offered early in the process. They're offered late. When you realize you're going to be very thin at a position the following year, and you're going to see dividends paid in 2024 on his JUCO recruiting this year.
Excellent. Ked, do you have any other questions?
No, I'm good. It's good information, which, you know, what we knew was going to happen. So we definitely appreciate that.
Perfect. Make my job easy. This is easy.
Well, you know, we appreciate you coming on. And of course, you know, I want to encourage everybody, you know, when you go on to, again, every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you go on to Illini Guys, and there's the Farrell Report. It's basically probably more consistent than the Mail. And I guess the other thing I'd like maybe give you a couple minutes to talk about is people may not realize that MikeFarrellSports.com is your website, and maybe you can give us kind of a rundown of what people can find there if they have even more of a obsession to follow recruiting, which you kind of led the way in, you know, allowing people to get information back when there was very little information to be had.
Yeah, so what the strategy was with that, you know, the MikeFarrellSports.com is to make it, start it off 10,000-foot view of college football and make it interactive and fun, just sort of general questions. You know, fact or fiction, Ryan Day's overrated, blah, blah, blah. You know, discussion points, things you could talk about, things you could, you know, share with your friends and argue about. And also, obviously, articles about college football, articles about recruiting, the portal. You know, we do a lot of NFL draft stuff. It's sort of like an everything you want type of stop. And what I'm doing, and this is the goal, is I'm going to take it down from 10,000 to 5,000. And that's where we're headed now, where the plane is descending. And we're going to get a little bit deeper into, I think, the 2024 class more than 2023. The signing day is coming up in 3 weeks. You know, we're digging into some of these late decisions that are being made. 2024, we're going to be closer to the ground. And that's just building up staff and building up people who can get trusted by coaches. And, you know, I I can contact most coaches. They'll talk to me whether they want to or not. But to build a staff of people that you know, who's this guy? I don't know who this is. So it takes a lot of, you know, massaging and nurturing. And that's what the goal is for 2024. 2025, you know, 2,500 foot view, maybe 2,000, you know, until we reach a nice sweet spot where we're, you know, you could turn on your electronics and we could just chill and have everything you're looking for, from breaking news to rankings to analysis and all that stuff. You know, and as for Illini guys, you know, I got to work on my column after we get off here. I thought I would run out of stuff. I really did. There were always weeks that I went in at the week and I was going to be like, Mike, there's nothing. I could look back. I could do, you know, a look back, or I could do this, that, the other. And you and I talked about, you know, the depth issues. And the reason I never did the depth issues article is because there was always news. And thank goodness it's an 8-4 season, because there is news. Without that, you know, if you're talking about a 5-7 season and you're staying with Bielema because you don't want to make another coaching change and you're still here to right the ship, but you're a couple of years away from competing in your own division, then it's boring. So this 8-4 season has really led to a lot of intriguing recruitments down the line. The expanded class, you know, like I said, from small to bigger. So it's just constant information that I'm getting and hearing and talking to kids, coaches, sources, and all that stuff. So that's been kind of refreshing. And hopefully it continues in the off season. I mean, the football season's over. They're going to play in a bowl game. Recruiting is going to be 85% done for 2023 in late December. And then we're going to be talking about 2024s, which aren't as exciting early in the process because they're far from the decision. But I think we're going to have some intrigue heading into, you know, signing day in February. And I think it's going to be a lot more fun to cover Illinois and also to be a fan of Illinois football recruiting moving forward because of this season. So I just got lucky. I fell into a really kind of almost magical season, but a pretty good one. And, you know, recruiting has been the benefit. So if you're an Illinois fan, you know, thank your stars they went 8-4, because now there's news coming in all the time.
Yep. Well, we certainly appreciate all you do to help the Illini guys stay relevant, and you give us additional information. Of course, we got KED feed and stuff on a daily basis, and then we have Matt, who is more of the X's and O's, covering the team and the coaches, and then he's getting information. So it starts spreading. So it's nice to see that happen. But thank you very much for coming on board tonight, Mike, and we appreciate your time.
Absolutely. And what I'll do for you guys, obviously, in the offseason, NFL draft is my groove. The portal, I'm going to do my best. I really am. It's impossible. Wait till you see next Monday.
I know.
It's going to be impossible for anybody to cover this with any sort of accuracy. And that's not anybody's fault. It's just the way it is. When 2,000 kids are going to go in a 45-day window, nobody can do anything about it. But it'll be fun, you know, covering the team in the offseason, NFL draft. And that's kind of why I tried to do this 10,000 foot view, because what are we going to talk about in March? Spring football and the NFL draft. You know, and then we segue into recruiting as we head into the early evaluation period in April. So the calendar is awesome, and it's going to be really fun for Illinois fans to follow it. So I'm excited about it. And it's really given me, man, I've covered Boston College, Rutgers. I've covered some schools that are sort of middling. The passion for this Illinois football team is much higher than those places, even though they are, don't hit me, middling.
Yeah.
And 8-4s, I mean, come on, we're doing good. So I appreciate you guys. I'm going to go write the column. I'll send it to you in a couple hours.
Perfect. Thanks, Mike. Have a great evening.
Thanks, Mike.
So there we are, folks. That was Mike Farrell. Of course, he is the godfather of recruiting. He had an availability in his schedule. And now we're going to go get to the mailbag. And we're just going to basically, I'm going to throw questions and we're going to let KED and Matt go back and forth. I'm just going to predict something. KED and Matt are going to disagree. And that's just fine. That's why we have these discussions, folks. That way Brad and I don't have to disagree all the time. We let them disagree to do it for us. So a couple things here. one of the questions is, are there any, and I'm going to kind of embellish them a little bit, but okay. Are there any Illini that you expect to enter the portal? So I'm going to have Matt go first, Ked respond, and you guys just, we have a discussion.
Pass, because I don't feel it's responsible to tell you that I think a kid's going to do something with his career that he hasn't announced that he's going to do yet. And I also know that there are interviews that are still going on inside the building this week. So I don't know how those are going. I do know that there have been some developments in players that I think are coming back. And I think, that I can maybe feel a little bit better about, like a Calvin Hart, who I didn't know what his situation was going to be after this year. And it seems like they're pretty intent on him coming back for another year. That's on the table. And then I just get the sense that I think a month ago, and we're recording this on December 1st, I think on November 1st, if you'd asked me if Keith Randolph was going to go in the draft, I would have said probably. And I think that that's kind of flipped into at least there's a likelihood that Keith might come back for another year and try to be what Johnny Newton was this year as a midseason All-American and a first team All-Big Ten player. But I do think that that's on the table. But for me to predict like a Daniel Barker type situation that happened this past offseason, I can't do it. So maybe Ked can, but I don't feel like that's on the table right now.
Ked, do you have any inklings, these also can be just speculation, just mm-hmm. labeled as such, but do you have any thoughts on any Illini that might be entering the portal?
Well, I know what you said prior to introducing Matt and I, but if the fans are keeping track, you can chalk this one up as an agreement with Matt Stevens, because the reason I'm saying that is because I do have some people in mind. I just don't think that's right, because a lot can happen. I mean, there's the one obvious that everybody knows about, but you're not going to hear that from Kedrick Prince. But I do think there's one, but again, a lot can happen. I know Matt's right. You know, they're having meetings, and, you know, there's some things that I know kids say to coaches what they want and what didn't happen. And, you know, I was talking to a coach today, and, you know, I'm like, have you ever benched a kid and, you know, you didn't give a kid a fair chance, and when the kid asked you for it, you did. Did the kid prove you wrong? And the coach said yes. So I'm only saying this because it's football. It's a little different. You know, I don't think it is fair, because I know a lot of people listen to our podcast, and I don't want to be that guy. And I know, and I appreciate what Matt was saying, to just say, hey, yeah, you know what? I'm just going to use Matthew Bailey because he's from my area. So, you know, oh my gosh, I can't believe Matthew Bailey's upset because he didn't start the last four games, so he's going to transfer. I don't think that's fair. It's a good question to ask, but I think that could be probably answered sometime in the middle of next week.
Cool. Well, of course, we'll be covering the portal next week, so people don't have to worry about that. Here's another question. What difference, if any, would Barker and Navarro have made this past season had they stayed at Illinois?
Ked, you can go first.
I think Barker would have been huge. I do, because I think as critical as I have been, and I'm going to own it, out of the offense, I think a guy like Barker would have changed some things. I really do think so. And I think, you know, I know we have other questions we're going to get to, and we just talked about recruiting. I think it would have made a huge difference. Having guys like that, it gives you another dimension. And I don't think, I mean, let's be honest, Barry Lunny Jr. didn't get a contract extension from a guy who played in Illinois and played in the NFL and who doesn't know what he's doing. I think sometimes they play to the strength of the kids, and I think the play calling's that way. I think sometimes they, you know, depends on how teams defend them. I think having those guys, if they both would have been there, Navarro and Barker, I think would have been a huge difference, only because they were very effective with what they did. And I know in the back of their mind, with the season that Illinois had, they probably regret that, because if you look at what's happening to them, this had not been so successful.
No, they don't, because I know a conversation that happened in the spring between Daniel Barker and this coaching staff, so that there was no chance of salvaging that relationship, and they did not want him back. I can say that on the record right now. And I won't go into the details of why that conversation went awry, but it was pretty bold and pretty distinct as to why that went awry. So there was no chance he was ever going to come back and play for Illinois anyway. Donnie Navarro would have been a senior leader, but he wouldn't have played much. And I think that this coaching staff, believe it or not, actually thought they had a freshman version of Donnie Navarro and Hank Beattie anyway. And so they were actually trying to find places for Donnie Navarro to get a lot of playing time next in that year. And then the Northwestern thing came out of nowhere. I talked to somebody the day that he was announced at Northwestern, and it was like 4 days after he went to like four FCF schools where he was going to be a starting wide receiver. And turns out Northwestern had a spot for him. And then, you know, that first weekend in Ireland, he's catching a touchdown pass. So I happen to know that there's a bunch of guys on that sideline, coaches and players, that were really happy with what Donnie was able to put together at Northwestern in that last year. But I also happen to know that there's a bunch of guys on that sideline that didn't want anything to do with Daniel Barker by the time that 2021 season was over.
So good. So we now the next one, this is going to be, this is speculation. So this is right down your guys' bailiwick of strength here. But okay. Does Illinois have any chance of getting a big name quarterback? We might want to put semi big name in the transfer portal. And is there a quarterback that you would say fits Lunny's style?
I'm going to go first. I'm sorry. I think there is, and I like the McNamara guy, even though I know I heard I was a lean. I think he fits that system. I think, you know, the days of getting a dual threat quarterback where they're going to run the ball, you know, a guy's going to run the ball, that's not going to happen. That's not a Bielema system, and that's not going to happen. I mean, I think if that was the case, you probably would have saw Isaiah Williams back there still. But I high profile to answer your question, I think they could if they decide to take that route. Illinois, you know, is now attractive enough, which we just talked about for the first 30 minutes in this show, where they could go out and they can sell that on to a quarterback. They can sell that you're going to compete. Brett Bielema's record is proven at Wisconsin, and he proved it. Even at 5-7, I mean, they were close to getting 6-7 wins last year, and they went 8-4 this year with a couple breaks. And, you know, I know they're always saying if and buts, but they could have been 12-0 this year. So I think it's an easier sell, and they've proven that they can throw the football and that they will throw the football. I mean, Tommy DeVito's here because of that. So is it possible? Yes, but there's a lot of guys who are going to be looking for quarterbacks because, let's face it, it is one of the most important, if not the most important, position on the football field.
I trust I trust ESPN's reporting that I think Cade McNamara is going to sign with Iowa.
Hold on. Before you get done with that,
yeah,
there's going to be Illini fans who are going to say, Matt, based on what they've seen with Brian Farron's ability or lack thereof to coordinate an offense, why would Cade McNamara go to Iowa? Not necessarily that Illinois is better, but why would he go to Iowa? Can you speculate on that just based on what you've seen?
I do not know why that immediately seemed to be one – where the destination was leaning the minute that Cade McNamara put his name in the portal, and B, why Pete Thamel at 6:30 on December 1st has put out a tweet that said he's going to sign with Iowa. I can tell you that that's exactly the same questions that was asked of Tommy DeVito when he decided he was going to come to Illinois. So, I'm not trying to answer a question with a question, but that's exactly what people were telling Tommy DeVito and Tommy Sr. and everybody in his camp when he decided he was going to come to Illinois. So I just trust Pete Thamel's reporting on that, because it's usually pretty spot on. So eliminating Cade McNamara from the discussion, I have my doubts, only because I think I've talked to enough people on the staff that I think quarterback is going to be the spot where they are going to be the most picky. They are not going to take some dude because he throws it a lot or has a lot of production or has all of these physical attributes that they want. Tommy DeVito checked every box for them, every single box for them. Otherwise, they wouldn't have, if he didn't check one box, they were not going to go down that road with him. And then I do think that they're going to be really, really picky. I agree with Mike Farrell that I think it's going to be a milquetoast reaction to whoever they do get out of the portal at quarterback. And I do think they're going to try to bring competition into the room. They also know that I think Art can be a graduate transfer, and they have to massage that as best they possibly can, because suddenly Art enters the portal and now you're down to Donovan Leary as your backup quarterback and Kirkland McHugh as your backup quarterback. So, and Mike's absolutely right. Like, you, good luck trying to take two kids out of the portal. Nebraska found that out real quick. And it didn't work. It worked out fine with Casey Thompson offensively, but Chuba Purdy was a disaster. That's kind of like recruiting two quarterbacks in a recruiting class. It never works out well. It never works out the way you think it's going to work out. So the last thing I'll just say is that that's the position that draws the most money. And I'm still 100% not convinced that Illinois has an NIL situation in which that they can compete with big boys for a quarterback if and when that person were to come into the portal. And so that's a major problem for Illinois football right now. And I have my doubts on whether or not they can play in that league.
Yeah. And I feel like the NIL situation is in much better place than it was even 6 weeks ago. But the definition of big boys, like, for instance, I don't know that Illinois could compete on the football side with Ohio State, but then again, Ohio State, you know, has like 9 5-stars sitting in their quarterback right. room, so they don't have to worry about jumping into the portal. So I do think if they found the right guy, I think they could be competitive. Now, you know, winning it, that's a whole different thing.
Well, Mike, I'll tell you what.
Go ahead, Ken.
If they need some NIL money, they could take my check and Matt's check, and then we could compete with the Ohio State guys.
No, they can't. Kendrick Prince does not speak for me. No, he can't. No, they cannot.
So there you are, folks. It didn't take them long to disagree. And then the other thing is I heard this on a board, so I thought I would at least ask. I'm not saying you guys will know the answer to this. But is there an older Leary that might look at Illinois?
I keep hearing that Devin Leary is going to go to the NFL.
Okay. That's kind of what I thought, too.
It's not set in stone. But, boy, that announcement when he got hurt and then he left NC State basically was, hey, I'm going to the draft. Like, and if Devin Leary proves that he's healthy and knocks it out of the park at the combine and then the pro day workouts, he's going to get drafted. So, you know, I'm not going to end the pipe dream until January 17th, when Devin Leary has to make the decision, like everybody else, and whether or not they're going to enter the draft or not, that there could be a reunion of the Leary brothers in Champaign. I won't end the dream for Illinois fans that in that regard. But, you know, I don't get the sense from the Leary family that that's on the table right now.
Okay. Here's a real contentious one. Will there be new uniforms next year?
I thought there was supposed to be. I mean, I remember, you know, Matt talked about earlier in the year that I don't like the home uniforms. I'm not even going to lie to you. The away uniforms I'm a fan of. But I thought there was supposed to be some new ones this year, but something happened to where they didn't get delivered in time or something. But I don't know why there's not 3 and 4 different options. But, yes, I do, because I know Bielema talked about he didn't like that, I think. He loves orange. I can definitely tell you that. I'm just not a fan of the blue. I think the blue looks cheap and cheesy. And, you know, when you look at all the other sports in Illinois, you know, I like what they have, women's sports, men's sports. Those blue home football uniforms, they didn't do it for me. But I do think there was a contract where they have to go so many years, and I think next year that's going to be up.
I do not want Illinois to ever sign a contract that we have to get the old Syracuse uniforms ever again. Because I swear to God, they look like the Syracuse uniforms from about 6 years ago. Matt, give us an update on this contentious uniform subject.
So when Bielema got here in December of 2020, he looked at the Nike contract and realized that he can't do anything with the uniforms until 2023. So he tied it. Here's my theory. Okay. And a lot of people have told me that they just don't agree with me on this, and that's fine. So Bielema changed the helmet. And the problem was, is that when they changed the helmet, the actual orange on the helmet doesn't match the orange on the jersey. But I, like, if you look at the numbers and you look at the jersey or you look at the helmet, the orange actually doesn't match. The orange on the jersey is more Syracuse orange, and the orange on the helmet is a little bit different. I've seen it. It does look different. So I do think you're going to get new jerseys. I just don't think they're going to look that different. And Ked's right. Brett Bielema is of the school of thought that when you turn on the television, he wants everybody to know what an Illinois team looks like. So if you're expecting three or four different helmets, that's never going to happen. And if you're expecting three or four different jerseys, that's never going to happen. So the idea of brand management from a marketing major at the University of Iowa, Brett Arnold Bielema, has decided that when you turn on the TV, he wants everybody in the country to know that that's an Illinois football game.
And, well, and I know how to do that.
From a marketing standpoint, that's Brett Bielema for you right there.
So from a marketing guy who went to Southern Illinois Carbondale.
Okay.
What I would do, because I do believe that, I would go with either a blue helmet with blue pants or an orange helmet with orange pants. And I would wear a white jersey at home and on the road. So it might look like the 85 Bears with the blue pants and the blue helmet and the white jersey. And then the white jersey becomes a brand. Just like it does in pro football.
See, I don't know, Mike, how did you feel about it? But like, I liked the old school Makovic orange, blue, blue at home. Like,
oh, like, yeah. I mean, those are good too. I'm just thinking
like the old Howard Griffith, Simeon Rice stuff.
Like, I'm talking about as a brand.
When it was the Giants, like Illinois.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love that. That helmet should come back. But I do love, though, the white jersey, because then you're wearing that at home and on the road. And it really does become a brand, because Illinois would always be in the white. And, you know, that is, to me, that's a cool thing. What I don't like, and this is just something so you know from a style standpoint, how divorced from reality I am. But when I see white pants and a white jersey, I want to get sick to my stomach. And if I see white pants and a white jersey and a white helmet, I just get depressed.
I don't think the helmet will ever change, but like, just let me get this straight. Like, Mike Farrell is not a fan of the Stormtrooper look, like on the road.
Oh, I
tend to dig it. Like, but like,
not at all. It reminds me of back in the 70s, you know, you would have some teams that were basically all white.
Right.
And like the New England Patriots with the old Patriot snapping the ball on the thing, and they would have like white pants and white jersey, and they were horrible. And so I've just never recovered from that. And I was,
if Illinois is not going to do the script Illinois that they do on the basketball jerseys on the helmet, then I am totally with Brett Bielema that keep the block eye helmet and wear it all 12 games. Like, that's the thing that I always respected the people at Auburn about, which was, we're not going to change the helmet. We're never going to change the helmet. And so that's the update I can give you, is that I do think Nike is going to provide them with a new set of uniforms, but I do think it's only going to be one set, meaning one set for road, one set for home, and then one helmet. And I think Illinois fans are going to have to start getting used to the idea that we have a brand, and they're trying to sell it to the brand of what it's going to look like six times a year at home and on the road.
All right, Ked. So we've talked a lot about our stylistic preferences here. Where do you fall on the Illinois color scheme?
I kind of like the white, and I like the white on orange. I just, like I said to you, I just can get rid of the blue for me, and I don't really want to see an all blue. I do think there needs to be three uniforms. I think all big schools do that, and I know what Matt said about Brett being kind of that traditionalist. Regardless of what happens, if he has something to say about it, I can definitely tell you this. It will have more orange than anything. 2 years ago, I think you both were there. He talked about everything being orange to him. He really likes that.
Well, Ked, what'd you think about my idea, though, of emulating the Cowboys, going building the brand with being white shirts everywhere?
I wouldn't mind that. And I don't know. I mean, did you say that you didn't like the white helmets, or did you say you like
the I hate white helmets. The remember the Cardinals of the 70s before, you know, Mel Gray was there and before Terry Metcalf? Those were painful teams to watch. So
the blue to me, I never liked the gray. I understand where that came from, but I was just never a fan. And if you really think about it, like Brad Underwood, what he does, and I know I'm not the only one who knows this, every time there's a really, really, really big game, like when they're out in Vegas, they're going to be in orange all the time.
So I don't do that in the NCAA tournament. Larry's got the article about the white jerseys. We got to warn the basketball coaches about that.
That's right.
Yeah, I also, like, I remember – I vaguely remember them playing Missouri in the TWA Dome in orange jerseys, and I hated it. Like, it looked bad on television. Like, I don't want them to go to, like, an orange crossing guard construction jersey. Like, that doesn't play for me. But other than that, I think if you look at the white script basketball jerseys that they wear, like script Illinois. If they did that in an orange helmet and like blue letters, I think that would look really, really cool. Like, but other than that, I love the idea of Brett Bielema trying to create a brand for Illini football. And I did never understood what the gray ghost thing was. Like, I tried to tell people back in 2019, like at Illinois in the administration, like, you do realize that this wasn't what they were wearing, right? If they're gray because nobody had color television. Like, Red Grange wore a blue and orange jersey. Like, it was gray because nobody had color television. Like, so you're not even wearing the right jersey. Like, yeah. And so, like, I was so glad when that ended on homecoming. And
Brett
Arnold Bielema thing, because he ended that real quick.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we got through the most contentious of all things. So now this one, I'm going to let Ked lead off on this.
Okay.
But if somebody's a Barry Lunny Jr. fan, what evolution will we see in his second year as offensive coordinator? Ked?
I'm glad you asked me first. If they can land, and I'm going to tell people they should subscribe to our website, because they're really going after some receivers. I mean, that's not a secret. I really think if they get some receivers that they can stretch the ball down the field, I know Matt's probably gonna punch me through the screen here. They're gonna throw the ball a little bit, and they're gonna throw. I'm not saying it's gonna be 80 times a game, but I think he is smart enough. I've seen opportunities, and I think he's good enough offensive coordinator to where they're going to throw the football. It's going to be different. But if they don't land guys that I think that they're after, which I think they're going to, I mean, I wrote a story about one kid that, I mean, you read between the lines, when it gets posted, this kid who decommitted from another school, who's an outstanding receiver, I like Illinois' chances with this kid. So to answer your question, I really think you're going to see a little bit different offense. Are they going to run the ball? Yes. I mean, Mike just talked about that, and we know that's Brett Bielema's bread and butter. He's not changing, and I'm okay with that. But they're going to throw the ball down the field more next year.
All right, Matt.
The introduction of Malik Elzey and Colin Dixon to this football team next year as true freshmen has no impact in my mind as to whether or not they're going to throw the ball vertically down the field.
Okay, they don't take long.
So what will have an impact is whether or not guys like Brian Hightower, guys like Pat Bryant, and guys like Isaiah Williams can take the next leap as receivers. If that happens and they get a quarterback that is dynamic enough, like Tommy was, to maybe stretch the football down the field, which involves receivers getting separation and then understanding and having the moment not be too big for them, then, yeah, I think Barry Lunny is going to open up the offense. But until that happens, this will be a run-based team, and they will play complimentary football. And the quarterback will have above average numbers, just like Tommy did this year. And when you've proven that you can win eight games and probably should have won somewhere in the neighborhood of 9 or 10 doing that, I don't see Brett Bielema getting away from that too much. And the one thing I will tell you about this staff is they do not lie to kids. And so if you're thinking they're going to come in and run a different offense because Malik Elzey or Colin Dixon decide to sign on the dotted line in either December or February, that's not what they're being told. So what I do love is the idea that there is symmetry among Brett Bielema and the way that he wants to coach, and Barry Lunney and what he's putting together with an offense to play complementary football to a defense that is going to have a whole lot of coaches back and a whole lot of players back, I think. And I think they're going to do that just as well. They're going to try to get to the same level on both sides of the ball that they were this year. And because they think that they can be a 9-10 win football team by doing that. And having, you know, again, a second year at wide receiver for Isaiah Williams, learning the position and having Brian Hightower and Pat Bryant be second year starters in this system. The key for me is going to be what kind of chemistry are they going to have with whatever quarterback is back there, because you guys see in early September games that it's just an absolute disaster offensively in terms of chemistry and in terms of symmetry and in timing with what, because of what has happening with the portal. So if Illinois can continue to develop that wide receiver position, they have a chance, but it's going to be with the veterans. It's not going to be with freshmen that you saw with this year with Sean Miller. I know he got hurt, but he wasn't even going to be a starter this year. So I just highly doubt that anybody's going to be able to come in and make a major impact to that position room, because I know how George McDonald feels about playing true freshmen where they've never been in a moment like that.
Hey, Mike, if you don't mind, I want to ask something. I'll be really brief. Since Matt mentioned the names, you know, I talked to Colin Dixon yesterday. I mean, I really did, and you're going to see the article on our site. I just know he's coming, if he comes to Illinois, with the mindset of how this offense is going to look, and what they've talked to him about was that, see, we can throw the ball down the field. We run the football, but we're also looking to throw the ball down the field. We're looking for guys who can get separation. So I'm going to tell you right now that he is definitely extremely interested in Illinois, and I can assure you he's not going to decommit from Wisconsin to say, hey, okay, you know what, you're going to come to Illinois. I can't promise you we're going to throw the football, because I know they don't lie to coach to kids. That's one thing I like about the entire athletic department down there, because I do this recruiting thing for a living. They don't lie to kids. But this kid, if he commits to Illinois, he's coming in with the mindset that ball's going to be thrown to them.
He also committed to the mindset that he needs to block, because I know how George McDonald feels about true freshmen that Olay a block in fall camp, too. And so there's a lot of different – Hank Beattie can tell you there's a lot of different ways to get on the field as a true freshman. But doing the little things that people on our message boards normally just don't give a darn about, that's going to go a long way with George McDonald.
Well, and I do think that the, you know, 50-50 passing, you know, is what you can kind of hope for here at Illinois. I just wonder personally, to improve the offense, and I'm not saying they played poorly, but I thought there was a, unpredictability to the guard, center, guard position, particularly when teams stacked, you know, in the red zone, when they didn't have to, teams didn't have to guard as much, you know, ground. I thought that became a problem for us. And I do think that, you know, getting better play for the whole football field in those three positions will make a difference. And if you, you know, also do that with some increases, maybe in little less predictable play calling, you might see exponential growth in the red zone performance of Illinois football. So now we're going to ask, this season, what was your favorite moment of the year? so far? And what was your most disappointing moment of the year so far?
Ked, go ahead.
My favorite moment of the year, because of where I live, was to beat Iowa. I can never renege on that, because I didn't think before I died at my age, and I'm already 115 years old, I don't think I'd ever see it happen again. My most disappointing part of the year was how, I don't want to use the word flat, but how they laid an egg against Michigan State. That was probably the most disappointing loss to me that I've seen in a long time. I shouldn't say a long time, because he's only been there for a year and three quarters of a year, but that was just disappointing to me, because yes, you know, we can all talk about the officiating. That game just was one that just left a sour taste, because you had the momentum, you get that win out of the way, and because you knew they were going to slip up. I mean, it's college athletics. I mean, it's going to happen. I was very disappointed with that outcome of that game. But again, the Iowa game was probably the most encouraging thing to me, because I saw a very physical football team. I was telling some of my friends, you know, and we all know this, at the fourth quarter, for the fans who are listening, you know, when we're in the press box at about, you know, maybe 8 minutes to go in the game, we go down on the field. And every year I was on the field, I'd always watch how big the linemen were from Michigan and Wisconsin and Iowa. And one of the things that's really encouraging to me was when I got on the field this year, I couldn't tell a difference. Illinois looked as physical as everybody else, and that's encouraging to me.
Matt?
The most encouraging thing was being in Madison, Wisconsin, and watching Brett Bielema win 31-10. And the reason was twofold. One, I know he wanted that one real, real bad. Real, real bad. Two, it's just a complete reversal from last year. The 24-0 loss that they had on homecoming last year at Wisconsin, and then you flip it 1 year later and you're beating Wisconsin by 3 touchdowns in a game that you had controlled for 3.5 quarters at their place. That was the most encouraging thing I saw, because quite frankly, and we saw it 2 days later, we saw it less than 24 hours later when, you know, Paul Chris got fired and Jim Leonard got put into that interim spot, and then Wisconsin starts spiraling. But the big bad wolf of the West went bye-bye. Like, and I just saw I saw Brett Bielema take his Wisconsin style and shove it right down the throat of Wisconsin for 60 minutes and win 31-10. And that was the most encouraging thing, because it gave everybody, including me, a vision of, oh, this can work. Like, and this can work here. And you know, the style of play can work here, and the philosophy can work here, and complementary football can work here at Illinois. And it doesn't have to be flashy. And so, yeah, I thought that was the most encouraging. Irony of all ironies, the most discouraging thing to me was the Indiana game, because I felt like it's the first game that I felt like Illinois just showed up at the stadium and they were better than them. And they just didn't play that way. Like, I can honestly tell you that Michigan State just played like garbage practically throughout the entire middle of the year. And Illinois didn't play very well in that game, but you still, like, from a roster standpoint, knew that Michigan State was, even with the suspensions, was pretty dangerous. Like, you still had that feeling. And that 16-point spread made no sense. But I tell you, Mike, when I showed up at the park on that Friday night in Bloomington, I thought Illinois had a better roster. I thought they had a better team, and I thought they were going to win the games in a very, very significant way. And boy, did they just play bad. They had so many penalties and turnovers. And like, it was the first indication that Barry Lunny hadn't figured out the red zone stuff and the goal line stuff and the goal to go stuff. And Indiana just survived a game that they had no business being in. And it was just because Illinois didn't play very well. And that was really that was the game where I think if Brett Bielema could do 60 minutes all over again, he would do that one. Because we saw, and I said it on, and I think I said it in the post game pod, like, this Indiana team's going to go like 3-9 or 4-8. Like, you needed to really, like, hammer them. And Illinois just didn't do it. And And I wasn't looking forward to the whole, because it was, remember, that was game two, and I wasn't looking forward to the oh here we go again stuff the entire week leading up to that. So that was the most disappointing one for me.
Yeah, and for me, the best moment was probably beating Minnesota. I was just worried, you know, are we going to be able to do that? And if you take out that long kickoff return in the at the start of the second half, really, Illinois, there was it was one of the more one-sided games that wasn't that far apart in points. And so I thought that was a lot of fun to watch. And for disappointment, it was the last time they went for it on fourth down against Indiana, because it really sank into me at that moment in time, like they could lose this game. As bad as they've been playing, I really didn't think that they were in danger of losing. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, the dominoes are starting to line up in a way that I'm not going to like as an Illini fan. So that was probably the most challenging, you know, moment that I had during the year. Let's go with another question here. This is very specific. Will Magnus Møller from Denmark contribute meaningfully next year?
Probably not. It's not a fault of his, but probably not. And
just needs more time to put weight on, right?
Well, yeah, and quite frankly, to adjust to the level of competition that he hadn't seen before he got on campus too, right? We're talking about somebody who I think is an upperclassman. They're expecting to either be a left tackle or a right tackle for the future with everything physically that he can bring to the table. And I don't want that answer to seem like Bart Miller is not encouraged or happy with his progress. Like,
right.
I don't think Joey Okla is going to factor in next year. I think he's going to be a fantastic center or guard in his Illinois career. In the same level that like Doug Kramer was a fantastic center at Illinois. They think the world of Joey Okla in that regard. Do they think Møller can be Vidarian Lowe? I don't know if they know that, but that's the trajectory that they have him on for. And, you know, as a redshirt freshman, I don't think that they are going to push him to be in a football game. This isn't basketball. Like, and especially at that position group, closer to the line of scrimmage you get and closer to the football you get, you got to wait for them to get to their third year before they're going to be ready to play. And it was funny. I won't name who it was, but I had a parent of a 2022 signee who was there was a true freshman year this year. He calls home after about a month and says, "Mom, Dad, two things. One, I don't want to play right now because I'm getting my rear kicked in by the first string defense every week, and I'm not ready to play right now. And second thing is, Mom, Dad, I'm getting more reps on the scout team and on what Bielema calls the Devo team than the second team offensive line is. So don't take me off this Devo team, right, development team right now." So there's not a whole lot of, in my, from what I'm hearing, at least in Bart Miller's position room, a whole lot of scuttlebutt of to, "I'm not playing and I'm not advancing up the depth chart fast enough for me." Usually when you recruit those types of kids, they get what the plan is. And to his credit, Brett Bielema was really honest with this set of 22 signees that, "Hey, I'm going to bring in some JUCO kids too, to even give you know, your son a heck of a lot of even more time to develop." So the answer is no, but he'll continue to develop in these bowl practices. He'll continue to develop in the spring, and then we'll see where he is in fall camp.
Ed, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I just don't want, I mean, it's a great question, and I saw it. I mean, he's a big specimen. I mean, he's big, and I think, you know, his future is bright. Matt's right. You know, guys are like that. You know, it's going to be tough to get on the field right away, but I think long-term, and, you know, you talk about, you know, building some depth, I think he would be huge because, what is he, 6'7", 6'8", or something like that? So, yeah, I'm totally okay, but I don't see him getting, if he gets on the field, he may get his four games in, you know, but I don't see him being a factor next year, not at all. At least not yet, I don't.
Okay. What do you see next year for Hank Beatty? The product of Sturdyville, otherwise known as Rochester.
being as Isaiah Williams back up again. Oh, go ahead, Ked. Sorry.
No. I'm sorry, buddy. Go ahead. You good?
Being Isaiah Williams is back up again. Unfortunately, with Hank, he plays the same position as Isaiah Williams, and they want number one on the field as much as possible. However, he carved out himself a nice role and not using that redshirt year this year in his first year. I fully expect him to, you know, continue to work and develop. It was interesting. I think he's now in line to be the backup punt returner, which he had never done that before for Derek Leonard at Rochester. So another thing that Brett Bielema was like, really, you never did that? And I think the kid is too humble to literally say, yeah, my coach didn't want me to get hurt. Like, But that was a way for him to carve out a niche role. But unfortunately for Hank, Isaiah is number one on the depth chart at his specific spot. But if Illinois were to go to a four wide receiver set, which I don't see happening, but he would be the second slot receiver right now. And I think that I think George McDonald and that coaching staff was really, really happy with what they saw in year one out of Hank.
Ted, any other?
Yeah, just because, I mean, I think he'll be a year older. I mean, is he going to start? Probably not, but I think they're going to utilize him more. I mean, he's too good of an athlete. And I know at the beginning of the year, Brett Bielema talked about four or five freshmen that he thought just really had it, and Hank was one of them. So where they use him at, but, you know, it's kind of like Isaiah. You know, he's too good of an athlete to not have on the field, and he'll be a second year in the system. You know, I think whatever spot they're going to find for him, you know, remains to be seen. And, you know, like you said, the kickoffs. But I don't know. I guess, you know, he's good enough to be on the field. But at the same time, you know, Isaiah Williams was what honorable mention, all Big Ten or something like that. You know, so he's going to play even if he didn't win that award. You know, Isaiah's going to play.
So now we're going to get into some contentious areas here. And we only have a couple more left. Would like you guys to both give a letter grade for Barry Lunny Jr. We'll do that first.
Ed, you can go first.
I knew this question was coming because I saw it. Okay, I got to give him a B-. The only reason being, I know what the roster looks like. And the minus comes from they were just too predictable. And again, I will say it, it wasn't just Kedrick. I respect people from colleges and my colleagues. It wasn't just me. So I think, you know, at the end of the day, you know, Bielema has to say, hey, yes, I like this. No, I don't like it. I get it. But I have to give him a B-, because it could be worse. It could be like last year, which, you know, made everybody, you know, nausea last year. So I give him a B-, man.
Matt?
I have the same grade.
What?
Yeah. Uh-oh.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Did you kumbaya, know? Folks. Apparently, Bill Parcells has handed out those lime Tostitos and everybody's getting along.
Well, because here's the thing. I thought they had – look, I think they had – better wide receiver talent than I gave him credit for in August, but not by much. So I'm not giving Barry an A because there are times in which, especially when all you had to do was line up and get a yard and you couldn't do it. And I give Barry credit is that he didn't try to Ryan Day this thing, which was, you know, I watched them at Maryland on 4th-and-1 throw an out route, a four wide receiver out route on 4th-and-1. And it literally almost made me physically ill. Because if you can't line up and get a yard, like these guys do 8-on-5 drills every day, which basically is five offensive linemen have got to try to figure out how to get the crease that they want against an eight-man front. And I'll preach this until the day I die, because this is what I hear from the building. We like this idea that you cannot run against an 8-man front is patently false. because all because three of the guys in the eight man front are never going to be near the football. So you're basically trying to get a seam on five guys, not to get two X's and O's on everybody. But like, if you can't line up and get a yard on short yardage, what they could not do in short yardage against Indiana was just nauseating. Like, and I think they got better, and that's a night in which also they didn't have Julian Pearl, and they had to move Isaiah Adams over to left tackle, yada, 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 yada. They don't run the same stuff. Like, the idea that Barry Lunney had to go from what they did last year, which was more power, to inside zone this year, I don't know what it's going to look like next year without Chase Brown and some of the offensive linemen that are leaving. So I think Barry's going to have to scheme it up again and figure out how they're going to run the football. But, I think that with Tommy DeVito, you would have liked to have pushed the ball vertically down the field more, but I don't think Barry thought he had trustable wide receiver options in order to do that. I thought Barry allowed his best player on offense to affect the football game in every game they played, and that's Chase Brown. And then I also thought Barry Lunney did an extremely good job of massaging that running back room to the point in which Josh McCray goes down and you didn't really get anything out of him this year. And it became a very big question mark as to who your number two running back was going to be. And they were able to get to the finish line of this season at 8-4 with that being a so if Ked's going to give him a B minus, I'll give him a straight B and say I think Barry Lunney did a really, really good job with what he was given. I think they played complimentary football and to a point in which they probably should have won 9 or 10 games.
So I actually was going to give him about a B minus, mainly for the problems with the red zone, but that's scary that we actually agree on something. Ryan Walters, what do you give him in terms of a ranking? Matt, you can go first this time.
He gets an A minus because at the end of the year, the only knock that you can have on Ryan is at the end of the year, there were teams that decided to use Ryan's aggressiveness to his disadvantage, to Illinois' disadvantage. And it took them, in my opinion, a little too long to adjust to that. They were taken advantage of by Michigan and Michigan State specifically because Ryan Walters knew Ryan, you could write down Ryan Walters's scheme and his play call sheet on a note card. It's not that complicated. And I'm not saying it needs to be. But there needed to be a counter to the screen game and to the outside stuff that they were running that pretty much made it difficult for Illinois to get a pass rush against Michigan and Michigan State. In every other game, I thought Illinois dominated the line of scrimmage. I thought every level from the D-line to the linebackers to the secondary was brilliant. I thought you developed talent all up and down the depth chart of that defense. I think Ryan gets an A minus, but only because I think there's two games that if he could have made an adjustment, Illinois might have been able to pull off both of those wins, especially the win in Ann Arbor. And that's not to say that I don't think they played really good defense against Michigan. It's just I can't give him a straight A because I think that there were defensive lapses in the Michigan State game and honestly in the Purdue game a little bit that forced them to have an 8-win season instead of a 10-win season.
Ed?
I'm going to give them a straight A. Going into this conversation, I was going to do an A-minus, and I'm not going to bore the fans because I know people are probably going to roll over, in their chairs, run off the rope because I'm agreeing with Matt. The Michigan State game, to me, was a dagger. I think the Illinois defense got exposed a little bit, And the reason I'm not going to give him an A-minus, because without this defense, Illinois wouldn't have won any games. They just wouldn't have. That dude is legit. And so I have to give him an A. I think, his over-aggressiveness, his play calling on defense, I think teams figured out. But, to his credit, he figured it out a little bit. And Michigan, definitely had better superior athletes. Illinois went in there with a chance to win that game, and that defense just rose to the occasion too many times. And, Even against Purdue, I think Purdue and Michigan State were the two games that kind of exposed them, but they cleaned it up. So I'm totally okay with that. I think the future's bright. I think, you know, you can have anybody back there playing defense. That guy, he's just tremendous at his job and what he does.
Yeah, I would go with a solid A. Hard to argue with the results. And final grade, Brett Bielema. Ked, you can lead this one.
I'm going to give Daddy Bielema an A2. Here's one of the things I love about him. He is consistent. He's old school. But some people don't like this, but I am an extremely competitive jerk. I am. And I love seeing Brett Bielema go out there and just lay the wood to those officials who screwed his team over week after week, and he knew what was happening. Some coaches just didn't, you know, they don't show emotion. And for the guy to go through what he went through, and I mean, he's just competitive, man, and I love it. And he's smart. He's very, 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 very intelligent. I don't know if fans really realize how intelligent and how bright he is and how he sees the game. So I like him, and I'm going to pat myself on the back, and I'll say it again. The day he got hired, even before they even made an announcement, he was the guy I wanted, and I was right, because the football program is not going anywhere. I'm not saying they're going to win 10, 11 games every year, but I tell you what, the days of going 1-10 and 2-9, those days are done.
Matt?
Ed and I have the same grade. I give Brett Bielema an A. I was going to give him an A-. And then I showed up in Evanston, and after the game, I get pulled aside by both Bielema and Whitman. And Bielema said something that I never thought he would say, which is he honestly believes that his comments about the officiating in the Purdue game and in the Michigan game led to really, really bad practices on Monday and on Tuesday, or I'm sorry, on Tuesday and a little bit on Wednesday. And he jumped them on Tuesday after the practice. And he let it bleed into the locker room with the players. And there was a tone of, I should have never done that. And I should have kept that private. And because it bled into the locker room, and now the players are willing to kind of think, you know, the officials are going to screw us and all this stuff. And it was affecting the play of the players. And it was affecting the morale of the players. And, you know, I don't know. And I bring that up because I don't know if 42-year-old Brett Bielema admits that mistake. I don't know if 42-year-old Brett Bielema can, you know, properly dissect what he's doing wrong and self-evaluate himself like 52-year-old Brett Bielema can. And I give him a lot of credit for what he does in terms of evaluating his staff and giving his staff the freedom to make mistakes, not only make great decisions, but make mistakes and self-evaluating his own performance week after week and year after year. That's where Brett Bielema to me gets a lot of points, is that we're talking about somebody who's been through it, who's been fired on the field after a regular season finale at Arkansas, and understands and has taken all of those experiences, including ones in the NFL with Bill Belichick and with Joe Judge, and said, I need to put all of these experiences together and continue to learn and continue to get better as a coach. And I was really impressed by that, which was, you know, I cannot let these players even think about the officials anymore. I can't do it. That's not responsible for me as a coach. And I got to keep that in our staff and in-house. I can't let it bleed into the locker room. And then they were able to go out and just absolutely whip Northwestern. I give Brett Bielema over the entire year a lot of credit for being able to transform this Illinois team and make them believe that they could win 8-9 games a year, because there's a lot of guys in that locker room now that don't think what they did was a fluke. And I covered the 2019 team, and I think a lot of guys felt like, boy, this is great, because I didn't even know this was even possible. When Lovie Smith went to that bowl game, there's a different mentality in that locker room at Illinois after an 8-win season, because Brett Bielema thinks this is what we do now. And there's a lot of people nationally and all over the country that were dead wrong about this hire, and have admitted to being dead wrong about this hire. And that, and I think Brett Bielema has transformed this program into, oh yeah, Illinois just beat you up physically. That's their calling card, and they're going to win 7 to 9 games every year doing that. And I think that's all because of Brett Bielema. And to echo what Ked said, I didn't know if he was going to coach the Purdue game. I didn't know if he was going to coach the Michigan game. I'm sorry, I have that wrong. I didn't know he was going to coach the Michigan game. I did not know if he was going to coach the Northwestern game. And for him to go out there and be on that sideline and take that leadership role after everything that was going on in his personal life, that said a lot to me too. So, yeah, Brett gets an A.
All right, now I'm going to give him a B, and I'll tell you why. Brett Bielema didn't come here to win 8 games. He came here to win championships and win 10 or more. So I think Brett Bielema, if you ask him, he's going to reserve that A for a year that he brings home the West trophy or goes to the championship game if there is no West and has the trophy and brings it back to Champaign. So maybe I'm wrong on that. I certainly was wrong on his hiring. I was not enthused. I think Ked and I talked about that in a podcast, and I like I said, I was like, bleh. And, you know, it turned out that I was wrong, and man, on situations like this, I love being wrong. So there's our mailbag, folks. We went through a lot of questions today. Thank you so much for the subscribers who, you know, they have the ability to get messages to us, and thanks for doing that. Hopefully the folks who are not subscribers who are listening to this think, hey, maybe I could get a part of that Illini Guys stuff. Well, go ahead and go there now. If you see the orange sweatshirt with the Illini Guys written on it, click on that link. That you can still get the Black Friday special, $99 a year for an annual subscription, and you get a sweatshirt. That's a pretty darn good deal. So go ahead. Do that now. Listen for our podcast. This is Eye on the Illini. We also have Sturdy for 30. We have Ked's Recruiting Roundup. Please go ahead and subscribe to all those. Please give us 5-star ratings when you can. If you think we deserve it, that is great. And we appreciate that. And finally, of course, listen to the Illini Guys Sports Spectacular. That's our 2-hour radio show that's on Fridays or Saturdays across the state. Go to IlliniGuys.com. Hit the radio button, and then you can see what city, what day, what time it's on, and you can tune into your station. Please send them an email or give them a call and thank them for having us on the air. You make it work for us. We have a lot of listeners, but the more encouragement we can give our stations makes it easier for them to decide to keep us on the air. With that, this is Illini Guy Mike Kegley thanking Matt Stevens and Kedrick Prince, and of course, Mike Farrell for coming on and talking to us. With that, we will have a podcast tomorrow night after Illinois opens against Maryland. Illinois is opening its 118th Big Ten season. They have not won an initial Big Ten game that's on the road since Iowa in 2010, and the Xfinity Center in Maryland is the only place that Brad Underwood has not won. So maybe tomorrow night's a night to start breaking some streaks. All righty, folks. Go Illini.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy,
Our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.